Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and today we're talking about networking. If you've done a technical interview, or if you've researched technical interview questions, then you've probably heard this one. When you go to google.com, what happens? From the user's perspective, you get the page for google.com. But how did that happen on a technical level?
I'm Julia Evans. I'm a computer programmer and I work at Stripe. And in my spare time, I like to write a programming blog where I talk about what I'm learning about programming.
She created this really great zine called Networking Ack, a computer networking zine. So I invited her on the show. Today, she gives us a really friendly intro to the world of computer networking after this. So today we are talking specifically about networking, and we're not talking about the job networking kind that everybody loves. We're talking about technical networking stuff. So when we mention the word networking, Julia, how would you even describe that? Where do you begin to define what that means?
So when I say networking, I mean computer networking. What's happening right now is we are in different places in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm in Montreal and you're somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we're talking to each other in real time, right? And so for that to happen, Information has to be sent from my computer on my laptop to you somewhere completely different, right? And how does that information get sent? That's computer networking. And there's a lot of different things involved. And the reason that I think it's exciting is that it all seems really mystical when you start trying to learn about it. Like I did a computer science degree, but I never took a computer networking class.
Oh,
like a few years after I graduated, I was like, I have no idea what's happening when I get a web page, really, right? Like I kind of vaguely understood the basics, but like I didn't really understand what was going on. And eventually I was able to figure it out. So that's kind of what I want to talk about, because I think this is all stuff which you totally can understand and it takes a while, but it's like it's not magic, right? Ultimately.
So what was the first step in you understanding it? Where did you begin?
So the very first step was this program called Netcat. You know the program Cat, which you can use to like take two files and concatenate them and write them to disk?
Mm-hmm.
You have a program, you run it through Cat, and then it gets copied somewhere else, basically.
Yeah.
So Netcat is like Cat, but over a computer network. So someone showed me that you could do this thing with Netcat where it's like, let's say I'm in my apartment and I want to send like a huge file to someone else who's in the same apartment as me. Mm-hmm. It turns out that you can do this really easily because if you're in the same place, you don't need to put the file in Dropbox, right? Because you're in the same apartment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's no reason why the file needs to go to like Dropbox's server and then like come all the way back to your apartment because you're in the same place. So you can do this cool thing that you can start up a web server on your computer and then have someone else in the same house connect directly to that web server and send you the file.
Oh.
And it can get sent at like 300 megabytes a second or whatever, right? Because you're right next to each other. And it's like not dependent on like your home internet speed at all.
Wait, so does that mean... So, okay, I have a web server. So there's a link, I assume, that that person can then go to?
So there's no link. Okay, let me try to explain how it works.
Okay.
So I start a web server, and every web server has a port.
Right.
So let's say I start my web server on port 9999. And Netcat is like the simplest possible web server. So basically all it knows how to do is receive data and write data.
Okay.
So what I can do with Netcat is I can start up a web server on my computer and I can be like, please receive data and then like redirect that the output to a file. So this is like the dumbest web server in existence. It does not know how to give you web pages. It does not give you anything. All it does is it grabs data and it puts it into a file.
So you start the web server. I'm the friend in the apartment who wants to send you data. What do I do?
So like I've kind of set up Netcat in like a receiving mode, and then you can use Netcat in a sending mode.
Okay.
You get my IP address on the home network. Like, do you know how when you're on your home network, you get this IP address that's like 192.168.something.something?
Mm-hmm.
I give them that IP address, and then they use the port 9999, and then they connect that with Netcat, and then they use Cat to like pipe the file into Netcat. And then Netcat takes all that data and just sends it to my computer.
And I'm assuming outputs it to a file.
Yeah, and then on my end, I write it to a file.
Very cool. Okay, so let's bring it back to computer networking. How did Netcat help you understand how networking works?
So I think that this is a really cool example because it kind of forces you to think about what's actually happening when you do networking.
Mm.
With something like this, you're like, wait, can I send files directly in the same apartment from one computer to another? And what does that mean? It seems more confusing, but it's fundamentally a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can break down how it works, then like you have to really understand the ideas.
Yeah, let's break it down in networking fundamentals. What are all of the pieces, the concepts involved in this Netcat example?
So in this example, there are two pieces. One of them is the IP address piece. So there are a lot of different networking protocols, and here we only care about two, which is good. So one of them is the...
Wait, how many would we care about?
Okay, well, do you want me to just tell you acronyms?
Sure. Let's do an acronym list. That sounds like a fun game.
Okay, well, let's say I'm going to google.com and I'm getting a web page. If you're going to google.com, the protocols that are involved are there's IP for the IP mm-hmm. address, there's TCP... There's DNS,
uh-huh.
there's HTTP, there's also, because Google is always going to serve you a secure site, there's like SSL or TLS. Secretly behind,
right.
like behind the scenes, there's BGP, but that's uh-huh. kind of advanced. There's Ethernet, right? There's Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's it.
Wow. What's interesting about that list is I've heard of just about all of them except for the VG thingy that you mentioned. I haven't heard of that one before, but the rest of them... I don't think I knew that they were protocols. Like, obviously, I've heard of DNS. I've worked with it. I've done, you know, DNS management for my domain names. But I don't think I've ever thought of it as a protocol. What is a protocol? Let's start with that. What, in this context, anyway, what makes all of these different things protocols?
In networking, everything is a message, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm sending you, like, my voice right now, fundamentally, I'm sending you a bunch of messages, maybe thousands or millions yeah. of messages. And each of those messages has a specific format. All of the formats have names. So mm-hmm. I guess when I say protocol, I mean like a format that has a name.
Yeah. So like structured, organized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so let's go back to Netcat. What are the two protocols we're using again?
So for Netcat, the two protocols are IP and TCP. So did you know that anytime you send a message on the internet, it could get lost at any time?
I did know that, which is nuts.
Right.
Like, I assume everything I send can always be found.
Right, but it's not, it can't. Like, a lot of messages just get lost. So if I'm sending you a message, it can just, some computer somewhere in the middle can just be like, oh no, I'm too busy. Oh goodness,
oh, no.
I give up. Like, they have a lot of buffers in them, and those buffers will yeah. get full, and it'll just be like, oh well, those messages
oh,
are
no.
lost forever.
Oh, wait, does it at least tell me if it's lost my message?
No, often not. It'll just like silently drop your message and that's it.
It's not even honest with me. God.
It's upsetting. So given this, it's kind of remarkable that the internet works at all. Because if anything can just get lost at any time, then when you're like downloading a picture of a cat, you would expect sometimes the picture of the cat to like get garbled or like be missing its tail or something, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, what we see is that the internet works, right? And that we get data reliably.
Yeah.
So the thing that's happening that lets us actually get data reliably is TCP. Which stands for something like Transmission Control Protocol, which is not
okay.
very descriptive.
No, it sounds important, but it doesn't really tell me very much.
But what it is it's what lets us send data reliably to each other. So anytime you're downloading a website, that always uses TCP. Because
okay.
when you download a website, you expect to get it back. Like anytime mm-hmm. you're sending a message and you expect to get exactly the thing that was sent, you're using TCP. Not all networking works this way, but a lot of the networking that we think of in our like day-to-day lives works this way.
So I would think that if TCP helps guarantee that I actually get the thing that I requested in its entirety, that everything would use TCP. So why would you use something else?
Because TCP kind of has some overhead, right? Because it's going to retry. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't want to retry. A common example of a time when you might not want to retry is actually when doing voice.
Oh.
So for example, let's say you're Skyping with someone, right? And you're sending them voice packets. If something goes wrong in the network and a bunch of packets gets lost, it's probably better mm-hmm. for the chat application to just drop all of that and have you try again to say your words again instead of kind of having the thing that you said arrive like 5 seconds late.
Then you get a delay.
Because then you get this delay, which is not what you want.
That makes sense.
Okay. So that's like the classic example of when you don't want TCP. And there are also some more computery situations where you're sending data and you either want it to arrive right away or not at all. Or you just can't afford the overhead.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so if it's not TCP, if we're doing the other thing that is like okay with losing information, what is that thing called?
That's called UDP.
What does that stand for? Do you know?
Something datagram protocol. User datagram protocol, I think. And the idea is I'm just sending you like, I think datagram is kind of like telegram. Like I've sent you like a bunch of data and I've just like thrown it at you and then either it gets there or it doesn't. And I just hope for the best.
Yeah.
That's actually how DNS works. Okay. I just send a DNS request. And if the server gets the request, it sends me a response back. And then if I don't get it, it's like my job to try again.
Okay. So the Netcat thingy uses TCP? Is that what we decided?
It can actually use both, but the case we're talking about, where we're sending a file, if you're sending a file, you want someone to get all of the bytes. Oh, I didn't mention another thing about networking that's really important, which is that if you're sending someone packets, messages on the internet, they could arrive in any order. So if I send you 10 messages, they could arrive like completely scrambled.
Whoa, that's not good.
So this is the other like key thing that TCP helps you solve, is it actually lets you rearrange the packets in the right order.
Yeah, interesting.
So there's a cool thing that can happen with networking. This is kind of a digression, but I think a really cool one, which is that there's no guarantee that like if I send you messages that they'll even take the same path. So I could send you a message and it'll go through New York, and I could send you a different one and it'll go through like Illinois, and I could send you a different one and it might go through Australia.
Oh, literally.
Yeah, like because it has to go somewhere in the world, right? Like I am somewhere in the world and you are somewhere else, and it has to go through other physical places in the world to get to you. Even during the same connection, there's no guarantee that the packets will get sent through the same places in the world.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Is it the case that ideally would take the same path, but I try to, and then that computer is like, nah, no, sorry, I'm busy. You have to go find a different train. Like, is the ideal process to take the same path and it just doesn't work, or does it not care how it gets there?
I guess, like, your computer, when it sends data, has no notion of what paths even exist. And every computer that's routing a packet kind of only has like local information about what's around it. If I'm sending something, I'm not saying like, oh, you should go through this path, right? I'm just saying please try to send this packet to this IP address and get it there somehow.
It's kind of like hitchhiking, right? You're like standing on the road and you see a truck.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty good metaphor for how routing works.
Interesting. Okay, so TCP, in terms of how it helps with the organization, is it that once it arrives, it looks around and says, wait a minute, this is not the right order, and it like puts everything in its place?
Yeah. So basically, I think the thing we've learned by seeing that like packets can get out of order is that like if you just have messages, like if I just sent you like parts of a file without any extra information about where they belong in the file, it won't work, right? So we need to add some extra information to the data that we're sending, which is where we get into like structure and protocols, right? So in the TCP protocol, every packet has an offset, and everything is in terms of bytes, because like the TCP protocol doesn't know, it has no idea what the data you're sending is. You're just sending basically like zeros and ones as far as it's concerned. It doesn't know if it's like a CAT or like an HTTP request or like, you know, it could be anything. So every TCP packet, there's an offset. So it could be like, okay, these are bytes like 1 million to 1 million and 200. And this is in like a packet because everything in networking is like a chunk of data. Like you sort of think that you have streams. TCP tricks you into thinking that you can have a stream, but down beneath everything is a packet. because every packet has the start and the end on it, when it gets to the other end, it can get reassembled.
Okay, so we start with a file, right? Let's say the cat picture that I want to send you with netcat.
Mm-hmm.
But we end in terms of it actually, what TCP sees, it ends with packets. So we start with a picture, we end with a packet. What does that processing, what does that translation to break down the image that I see into those packets?
So your operating system does that. From the perspective of, like, Netcat is in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
The operating system provides something. Have you called the socket interface, which is a jargon term you might have heard?
I haven't. What is that?
It's the thing which answers the question which you just asked.
Okay.
So you were like what lets you like just send data and then break it down into packets? The interface that lets you do that is called the socket interface.
Huh, interesting. Okay, so as far as my Netcat thing is concerned, it doesn't have to worry about breaking it down. It already has that. That's already happened by some other tool, some other process.
Right. So it just says like, hey, operating system, give me a quote-unquote socket.
Mm.
And then it starts writing data to that, and the operating system deals with it. And then it'll break the data down into packets. If it needs to retry sending it, it'll retry. And then when it's done, it'll end the connection.
Wait, are sockets related to, like, web sockets?
That's the same word.
Oh, okay. So,
when people say web sockets. Yeah. Yeah. They're related to web sockets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anything else we should know about our TCP and how that works?
Oh, maybe we should talk about one more thing about TCP, which is like, how does it know whether it should retry or not?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Because I said that like the operating system will decide whether it should retry sending the packet, but how could it know?
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
I said that like if a packet gets lost, then no one tells you that the packet gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like every packet has a number on it, right? Which is like how far in the stream it is, like how far in the stream of data in it is, or how far in the file it is. So what the receiving server will do every so often is it'll send something called an ACK, like, or an acknowledgement, where it's like, hey, I got all of the bytes up to, let's say, 1 million. And then the person sending the data will know, like, okay, I don't need to send anything before 1 million anymore.
Okay.
And then if something hasn't been ACKed for too long, then it'll retry and it'll send it again.
Interesting.
So it's actually pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just a basic... I guess it's not exactly a call and response, but sort of like that, right? Just a receipt that says, hey, I've done this.
Yeah. It's just like, I send you data and you're like, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, great. And then I send you more data and then you don't really reply. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I'll just try again.
That's hilarious. Like, you get the silent treatment. It's like, I'm sorry. Let me apologize one more time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's all just like the silent treatment or like helpful acknowledgements.
I never knew the internet could be so emotional. Okay, so let's talk about the IP. How does that fit in?
We could start by talking about the IP in the context of my apartment.
Sure.
So one interesting thing is like when you send a packet, you think of sending it to an IP address.
Mm-hmm.
But when I send a packet something in my apartment, it doesn't actually get delivered according to the IP address.
Oh.
It gets delivered according to this other thing called the MAC address, which you might have seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's this weird number. It's like, it's hexadecimal, which means that it's like, it'll look like 5CDFAE. I think it's like 12 pairs long or something. Every computer has like a unique one of these. So my laptop has one, your laptop has one. And when you're on like a local network inside your apartment, packets that gets sent to my laptop will have the physical address of my laptop on them, which is like not how you think about networking.
No, not at all.
Right? As having like physical addresses, but that's actually how it works at the lowest level.
Interesting.
Which is kind of cool because like you can actually have lots of IP addresses throughout your life, right? You can go to that cafe and you get one
that's
IP address, then you're at home and you have a different one, and then you fly somewhere else and you get a different one.
Just collecting IP addresses all over the place.
Yeah, you can have they're very like ephemeral. But and MAC addresses are like the thing which are like stamped onto your computer at birth. So when I send a message to someone else in my living room, I actually need to figure out what their MAC address is. But basically, I'm like, hey, who has this IP address? And then someone will tell me. They're like, oh, it's me. You just send it to this MAC address and then I'll send it to them. But you can only do that if you're really directly connected to someone, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you say directly connected, do you mean... in terms of like physical distance, do we mean connected to the same area network? Like what?
Let's say connected to the same router.
Okay, router. There we go. Yeah.
And so what happens is, like, if I'm sending some like a message to a packet to an IP address, like in my room, I can just send it to their MAC address directly, right? There's no problem. Mm-hmm. But then most of the time it'll be somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll send it to my router and I'll be like, hey, try to get it there.
Do your best. I believe in you.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I believe in you. And sometimes it'll be like, oh, well, that IP address doesn't exist, or there's no, you know. Mm. And that's kind of how all networking works. It's like you're either sending a packet to something on your local network, which you can talk to directly, or you're asking another device to kind of like intermediate for you, right?
Mm.
Like you're talking to like your home router, a corporate router or something. And you're like, hey, please get this to its destination. And then send the response back to me.
Yeah. Okay. So that is if it's someone sitting next to you, same network, same, you know, connected to the same Wi-Fi. If we are sending something through the internet, what are the parts of that that would be different?
So this is where this weird BGP thing comes in. So BGP is kind of like the hitchhiking thing. It's like the hitchhiking protocol. So I'm like, okay, send this to Google. And then my router is like, all right. And probably what my router will do is send the packet to my internet service provider, right? Because they give me internet. So it'll send the packet to them. And then they have these like huge tables on their routers. They have these like big routers in their data centers that are not like my home router.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these like tables that say like, hey, here are all the like IP ranges on the internet. And here's where you should send every packet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it looks at the fact that you sent it to google.com and it maps it out to an actual place to send that.
Yeah. But what it actually looks at is like the IP address for google.com, right?
So if it falls within a range, it knows where to go.
And then it'll kind of just get sent in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then every router will keep doing that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then maybe at some point you'll get to like you'll get to Google and then Google will have the IP address and then it'll do something. It'll like send it somewhere in its internal network.
Interesting. That seems like a whole lot of work considering how fast it is to actually get to google.com.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, a cool thing about packets is that they travel at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I always forget exactly the number, but to go like halfway around the world at the speed of light, it's like somewhere between 50 and 100 milliseconds, which is not really that fast, right? Like if you want to go to Australia and back 10 times from here, like it'll take you like a second. Like if you're expecting something to be like real time, like people notice this in gaming, right?
Yeah.
Because like you're trying to, maybe you're playing some, I don't know, first person shooter. I never played these. But I think like your reflexes get important and you want to be able to like react to stuff really fast. And so it actually becomes really important to be like physically close because the speed of light isn't fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that also why it's helpful to use things like CDNs and, you know, connect to servers and data centers that are just physically closer to you?
Yeah, exactly. In practice, when you talk to Google, you won't talk to their servers. I assume that they have a lot of servers in California, but if you're not in California, you probably won't be talking to a Google server in California, right? They'll have built a data center somewhere closer to you.
Yeah.
Or their CDNs. Like my blog uses a CDN, so it'll be cached somewhere locally. So when I talk to my blog, then I'm actually talking to a server in Montreal, so I can get it very quickly.
Very cool. Okay, so that's one difference is the whole hitchhiking thing that obviously we don't have to do if the person is sitting right next to us. What's another difference when I'm going to google.com versus, you know, sending you a file locally with app? What is it? AppCat? Cat app? Netcat.
Netcat. I mean, a lot of the other pieces are the same, right? Like you're using the same protocol and like in some sense you're probably using the same networking stack because the networking, like I run Linux on my computer and a lot of servers also run Linux. So in a real way, like the software that's processing these packets is kind of the same, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that's really cool to me about networking is that like a lot of these things are the same.
Mm.
Like the stuff that's happening on my computer when I do networking, like in my house, is like the same in a lot of ways as like what's happening on like fancy websites that are processing like millions of things per second.
Next up, we get into the security part of networking. What makes HTTPS more secure than just HTTP? And if I wanted to send encrypted data, where does that fit in? She also shares her secret to how she's written so much great content and been so consistent in her blogging over the years. After this. So actually, let's talk about security a little bit. when we go to a secure site, when we go to an HTTPS versus just an HTTP, what is actually happening? What makes it more secure?
Okay, so there are two parts of this. There's how do you know that the server you're talking to is actually google.com?
Ooh,
which is very important. And like, how do you send data securely between those two sites? And I think it's important to realize that those are different, because you can very easily send data extremely securely to someone who is not like who they claim they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not mm-hmm. good. And I think when people talk about certificates, and especially when people get like angry about certificates, mm-hmm. they're often like more concerned about the question of like whether the person is who they say they are than like whether the data is being encrypted correctly.
Mm.
So which piece would you rather talk about?
Well, I guess let's do the verifying you are who you say you are. That sounds like problems of the internet in general.
It is problems of the internet. So the way it works is, maybe let's pick a different website. Maybe let's pick neopets.com.
Ooh, for a Neopets, while. Yeah.
Because it's like extremely important that when you go to neopets.com that you're not being intercepted by someone trying to steal your Neopets password.
Yes.
What happens is there are these certificate authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do if I'm neopets.com is I say like, hey, I'm neofets.com, and they make you prove it to them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
There are different ways you can prove it. One way you can prove that you are who you say you are is they'll give you like a file to put on your website, and then you put the file on your website, mm-hmm. and then they see it and they're like, oh, well, you control that website, mm-hmm. so you must be like, you must own it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a pretty simple way to prove that you are who you say you are. There are other ways. There are more fancy certs that are called like extended validation certs, mm. where you need to like get like a lawyer to sign something, oh, wow. and like show them the like business documents and be like, I really am this corporation. Oh. And then like if you get one of the certificates, you get a fancier thing in the browser, which says like neopets.com incorporated. Mm. Anyway, so basically I'll send them a thing, a certificate signing request,
mm-hmm.
Which is like, okay, so what's a certificate signing request? When you're encrypting data, you have this thing called a private key, right? Which is like a secret that you use to encrypt the data. And an important part of a certificate is actually like a cryptographic key. Like if you download the certificate for neopets.com, you'll download like a public key from them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do a signing request, you'll say like, hey, this is the public key I want to use when I'm doing like cryptography for my certificate.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I want it to be valid from. This is when I want it to be valid until. This is like the name on the certificate. It's for neopets.com. And I think there's a few other pieces of information, but those are the important ones. So you wrap those all together, and then you send that to the certificate authority, and then they sign it basically with their like secret key, which only they have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of interesting thing where like, if I see a certificate for neofets.com, like, how do I know that someone trustworthy signed it, right? Like, how do I know to trust that person?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the way you know who to trust is actually you have, like, a list of files on your computer that are kind of, like, hard-coded there. And they don't really change that much.
Interesting.
So there's just, like, a list of, like, 100 people who your computer trusts, and that's it.
Hmm.
Which is kind of cool. Like, you would think it might be more dynamic than that.
Yeah.
But it's not. There's just this list of like 100 people.
So by people,
like, or 100 organizations.
Okay, so those are the people who do the signing thing, who do that part of things.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and like typically, they'll be like part of your browser.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Chrome will or Firefox will ship with a list of trusted certificate.
Interesting. Okay, so SSL, at least the part that we're talking about, is I am who I say I am because this trusted organization that you have a list of on your computer, doesn't really change, has checked me out, been giving me this file thingy to put on my computer or on my where that website is hosted, and therefore we have all agreed that I am who I say I am and you are safe to trust me. Does that roughly sum it up?
Right.
Okay, that's not too bad.
That's exactly it.
Okay, so that's one side of being secure and all that. What is the encrypting data part of things? Where does that fit in with how computer networking happens?
Here, there's a protocol called SSL or TLS. This is a weird thing that I think could be good to clear up.
Yeah.
Like, I assume that there are reasons other than, like, to confuse us. But yeah, I kind of usually treat SSL and TLS as being synonyms because it's easier. So how does encryption work? This is a good question. I'm trying to figure out how to answer this in a useful way.
Actually, let me ask you this. Do you feel like that still falls under the networking umbrella, or is that tangential enough that it doesn't make sense to cover it in this interview?
It's definitely like another layer on top of networking. So mm-hmm. we talked about TCP, where you're sending just like streams of data, right?
Mm-hmm.
So encryption lives like one level above that, kind of, where instead of sending streams of data, you're sending like encrypted streams of data.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really care what's in the streams at all. It just knows that it's encrypting it.
Interesting. So is it, you know, we talked about data like hitchhiking across things and trying to get to its final destination. Is it that the road it takes on its way there is protected and encrypted? Or is it that before it even gets on the first, you know, truck, it's already been encrypted and now its encrypted version is being passed around through the internet?
So it's before it even gets on the first truck, it's been encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some sense, like, this is important because in some sense you can like spy on network traffic
if you want.
Like if someone in my house is like sending data over the internet, I could just look at it, right?
So weird that we can do that.
Like some server in the middle is compromised. They can just read all of the data, right? Or the NSA can do it, right? And of course they do. So like the cool thing about encryption is that it means that people can't read your data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other cool thing about encryption, like, is that they can't interfere with your data.
Oh, interesting.
Like, one thing that a lot of, like, sketchy internet service providers do is they'll, like, decide to, like, insert ads or something into your web pages.
Oh, what?
I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's really annoying.
That's so inappropriate.
It's so inappropriate. Yeah. But if you use encryption, they can't, right? Because they can't say like, oh, there's this web page, I'm just going to insert something in it, because they can't even know it's a web page because it's all been encrypted.
So not only can they not see, you know, what's in it, they don't even know what it is.
Right. Yeah, they don't really know that it's a web page, right? It could be anything. Yeah. And so they certainly can't change it because they have no idea what it is.
Interesting.
And that's like why I decided to use encryption for my website, actually, because I was like, my website isn't secret, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a public blog. But what I realized was I was like, oh, I don't want people to be like inserting random ads into my website, right?
Yeah.
I want people who are visiting my website to see it the way I wrote it, and that's it. And if I use encryption, then I can get that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Wow, I feel like we covered so much today. We talked about TCP, UDP, IP. We talked about what is that? Netcat. I keep wanting to calling it like
we
cat
talked about
app.
Hitchhiking.
I don't know why. We talked about hitchhiking. Yeah, we talked about DNS. We talked about a bunch of stuff. Of all of these topics, because you are, you know, a working developer, you code and build stuff on a daily basis. What of these topics, this conversation, has been most useful or applicable to what you do on the job?
So knowing how TCP works has been a little bit useful because sometimes, like, if I have two computers that can't talk to each other, understanding how TCP works makes it a lot easier to debug that because I can be like, are like any packets being sent from this computer to this computer? There's this program that I used called TCP dump, which will tell you exactly what packets are being sent and received. So I can just look at what's happening on the computer, and it makes a lot easier to debug firewall issues. And my team is in charge of, at work, is in charge of things like firewalls. So it's very relevant to me to be able to debug those issues.
Yeah.
When they come up. In practice, like, my team owns a lot of networking stuff. Like, we own, like, we're in charge of a lot of that stuff, which is why I had to learn some of it. So I think I've had to use a lot of/all of this knowledge of the job because of that.
That's awesome. And one thing I also just love and appreciate about you is the fact that not only do you create these awesome zines, and there is, by the way, a zine on networking. So if you want a visual representation of this conversation, definitely make sure to check out the networking zine. We have links, specifically the networking one, in your show notes. So make sure to check that out. But the other thing I love about you, besides the fact that you make all this great stuff, is that you make it pretty consistently. Like, I was looking at your blog posts, and since December 2012, you've been pretty regularly writing and sharing your knowledge, very technical knowledge, by the way. How do you do that? How have you managed to be so consistent and so regular in your creation and in your publishing?
Yeah. So people ask me this a lot. One thing is I don't edit a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I make a lot of mistakes in my blog posts, which is in some sense on purpose, right? Because like if I'm going to write something, I don't have unlimited time. So I'll like wake up Saturday morning, have an idea of something I want to say, maybe write for 2 or 3 hours, hit publish, and like go to lunch.
Wow. That's awesome.
And I think the fact that I can do that is really important in like being able to continue to write it all. And
yeah.
I've gotten pretty good at writing like medium good things quickly, right? Like they're not like the best blog posts, but they're like good blog posts and they're like interesting and they like say what I want to say. And I think it's been really important to focus on like writing stuff that's good over like stuff that's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you always been that way, or did something happen to kind of get you in that mindset of I'm okay publishing, you know, mistakes here and there and it not being perfect?
So when I started blogging, I was at this place called the Recur Center, where I was spending 12 weeks trying to become a better programmer. But another one of my goals was to, like, get a job after, right?
Because
before I was at the Recur Center, I had a job which wasn't that great. And I wanted to have a job afterwards, which was, like, way better, right? Like,
yeah. Did that work?
And I did.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. I wrote 48 blog posts,
wow.
4 days a week for 12 weeks.
And that is so
like,
impressive.
Having done that, it became easier to like write blog posts quickly because there it was like the rules, right? And I'd already like been coding all day. So it was, I had to publish quickly. Otherwise, it wasn't going to happen.
That's the thing about constraints. You know, sometimes it works in your favor when you don't have a lot of time. You just, you know, you don't have a lot of money. You got to figure out a way to make it work within the rules that you have. So, yeah, once in a while, it could come in handy. It looks like you took advantage of those constraints.
And I think I learned by doing that it's not really that predictable what people are going to find interesting or not. Sometimes it's better to just like make a lot of stuff that I like and that I think is interesting, but not like stress too much about trying to like optimize what other people are going to think is interesting, right?
Yeah. Ah, such great advice. So next, let's move on to some fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
Okay, so I thought about this a lot and I determined that what happens is if people give me advice that I don't like, I kind of don't hear it / ignore it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea.
That's awesome. That's a great filter to have. Okay, let me ask you a different question then. What is bad advice you've heard given to newbies, to beginners?
I'm kind of blanking on the only advice that I can think of that is like to focus on one thing. Like if you're learning programming, to like pick a programming language and stick to it, which I think is pretty reasonable advice. But I've forgotten all the rest of the advice.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Number two, my first coding project was about?
So I wrote a hangman game on my TI-83 calculator in math class.
Neat. So you were one of those people. Oh, I was so jealous of those people who knew how to program things in their TI-83. I never figured out how to do that. That's awesome.
It was really exciting to me because I couldn't figure out how to program before that. Like I had this Windows computer and I didn't know how to program it. And then I got the calculator and somehow I figured out that I could program it.
Yeah.
And it was just like the most exciting thing because it was the first time I had something which I could figure out how to program.
Yeah. Yeah. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
So when I started to program, I was like 15 and I think I spent a few years, like maybe 3 years programming kind of in a, like almost like in a void, I feel like. My mom bought me a computer, which was amazing. And I like installed Linux on it. And I had my own computer and I figured out how to make Linux work.
Good for you.
And it's all Debian. What was it? Debian Sarge? Like just when it got a good installer. Anyway, I got a programming book about how to write Perl. And I feel like I lived in this like space where I was just like figuring things out on my own at like probably a relatively slow pace. And it was really great. I'm really happy that I had that because like there wasn't anyone telling me that like I wasn't learning things fast enough or that I was going in the wrong direction. Like I didn't get any advice.
Yeah.
and I feel like that was like in some ways a great gift, right?
Yeah.
Because I could just do anything I wanted and have fun with it.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say that the lack of guidance and the lack of mentorship was a good thing. But that's an interesting perspective. I feel like there is a lesson in that for people listening who may be in a similar position where they're kind of learning mostly by themselves, mostly in a vacuum, that maybe there's a freedom in that that allows you to explore and try new things and figure out, you know, for yourself what should work and what feels right and kind of go about it untainted by people's opinions and perspectives. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And I think especially like if you're like, I mean, at the time I was like in high school, right? So I was lucky in that, like, I didn't have any pressures. Like I didn't need to, like I was in school. I could just like do stuff on the side. I had enough free time. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a lot of people who are learning to program aren't in that position. Like they have to maybe actually have a job and like support themselves, which I didn't have to do. But it's, I think if you are in that space, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Julia, for teaching us all about networking. Do you want to say goodbye?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
And that's the end of the episode. Let me know what you think. Tweet me at CodeNewbies or send me an email, hello@codenewbie.org. If you're in DC or Philly, check out our local Code Newbie meetup groups. We've got community coding sessions and awesome events each month. So if you're looking for real-life human coding interaction, look us up on meetup.com. For more info on the podcast, check out www.codenewbie.org/podcast. And join us for our weekly Twitter chats. We've got our Wednesday chats at 9 p.m. Eastern Time and our weekly coding check-in every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for listening. See you next week.